Over these 4 short weeks of Advent, I would like to invite us to meditate upon the good news of our Christian faith, the core message of what we believe and what it means for us, the gospel. This proclamation has 3 stages, and each stage has its own proper response on our part that's required. These 3 stages might be summarized as creation and our response of reverence, the fall from grace and our response of repentance, and redemption in Jesus Christ and our response of rejoicing. So today I'd like us to consider God's creation. I am by no means an expert scientist, but the more I learn about science and nature, the more wonderful and awe-inspiring creation seems to me. I can think of the variation of species, the extraordinary complexity of the human brain, the vast expanse of the stars, the subtle beauty of the colors of a sunset, the power of a lightning storm, the capacity of an ecosystem to heal itself over time. From the largest scale, like a galaxy that holds 100 billion stars, and by the way, our star, the Sun, is an average-sized star. It's 1.3 million times larger than our Earth. So there's 100 billion of those stars in a galaxy. And by the way, there's an estimated 100 billion galaxies. So it's mind-blowing. So from the largest scale to the smallest, nature does not fail to astound. Among the smallest would be an electron, which is compared to a grain of sand. It's 2,000 billion times smaller than a grain of sand. When I even think about thinking about such things, I'm filled with a sense of true awe. A-W-E. Creation is awe-inspiring. How do we describe what this experience of awe is like? I believe we've all experienced it. Maybe simply at a sporting event or a concert, when you're caught up in the collective awe at an extraordinary human achievement. We feel it when a complex novel ends in the most perfect way. It can be experienced at sunsets. It's experienced when lovers behold their beloved. When the beauty of the night star stops you in your tracks. You have to get outside of the city for that to happen. But awe is an experience that we have. Remember, I went up to the Porcupine Mountains in the Upper Peninsula at the end of September one year. And we got there at night, kind of on a dark day, and we hiked in. And the next day, we hiked up to the highest peak, and then we looked out. And as far as the eye could see were the colors of the trees, and their bright yellows and orange and reds and greens at the peak of fall. Took a picture of it, and the picture doesn't do anything to allow you to experience what it was like to see that. We've all had experiences of awe. It means that we're in the presence of something that's greater in some way than ourselves, something that transcends us. Awe is a feeling, but it's a feeling that transcends feelings, I would say, in that its very nature is to disclose something that is beyond us. It's a feeling that's overwhelmed by our incapacity to grasp the grandeur, the sublimity of what we find ourselves in the presence of. Awe is a negative thing, too, in that it shows us how small and insignificant we are. Yet the feeling of awe makes it okay for us to be small and insignificant. We feel happy and fortunate to even be capable of taking in that which has caused us to feel awe. Awe is a humbling experience that engenders deep gratitude. Psychologist Dr. John Verveke, who has studied the experience of awe extensively, said that awe is one of the few instances where people's sense of self and egocentrism is shrunk, and they find it a positive experience and they want it to continue. Why am I going on and on about this? Well, it's because I believe in a very fundamental way that this experience, it's a shared experience, gives us a glimpse of what it means to be truly human and a glimpse of what it means to be capable of relating to God, who is the ultimate transcendent. To be human is to share in certain capacities that transcend nature that's around us. For example, we can conceptualize the future, something that's beyond our present. We can communicate truths about the hidden interior states that we have in a way that others can grasp them, maybe using art or poetry, for example. We can ask questions about the meaning of our existence, not only about the process of how things came to be, but why they came to be, why they exist. We have certain capacities that transcend. To experience awe is to experience wonder regarding our rightful place in the universe. Where does this awe come from? Towards what is this awe being drawn? It seems to me that awe is built into the human heart in order to assure that we never get locked in the confines of the self, that we never reduce the universe and its meaning and its value to our own subjective experience of the material world. In a word, awe discloses a higher reality. Awe shows us our insignificance, while at the same time invites us to climb out of it. Awe is a moment of God's revelation. Even if He's not made known in a personal way through it, or in a way that's easily passed on to another, it's a moment where God is beginning to reveal Himself. Now, our Christian understanding of creation and the high point of creation, the human person, is unparalleled among all religions, philosophies, worldviews. God is one. God created gratuitously as a sheer gift, an act of love, not out of any constraint, no necessity. He did it as a gift out of love. And God has created us as human beings to be in some sense like Him and capable of having a meaningful relationship with Him. Like certain moments in a Shakespeare play, awe is the moment when that creator indicates His presence to the audience, ever so subtly, but unmistakably. It's mediated by the scene that unfolds, but we realize there's someone behind the story. Awe is our realization of our capacity to relate to and to participate in that which transcends, in goodness or beauty or truth itself, or we could say the life of God. Now, I would like all of us to experience this awe with regularity. We experience it in a deep friendship when we know someone has truly understood us. We experience it perhaps in the beauty of nature. We ought to be able to experience it in church, that place that is designed specifically to aid the encounter between God and man. Awe should be a normal part of our experience of the sacred liturgy. And it can be experienced as an entree, as a precursor to authentic religious experience. Now, I mentioned earlier that awe is a complex emotion, It has aspects that are positive and aspects that are negative. We feel awe at something beautiful. It's positive. But when Goliath stepped up, the soldiers of Israel felt awe in the presence of that great warrior because of his power to destroy. They were afraid. So we enjoy awe, but at times it's too much for us. We're drawn in by it, but we're also uncomfortable. We feel out of place, unworthy perhaps. Awe is ennobling, yet it's terrifying. Maybe because it's so ennobling, and we get a glimpse of the grandeur and meaning behind our existence, we're afraid of what that might mean. So our emotions have a role in the sacred liturgy. We welcome our emotional states. But friends, we shouldn't try to manufacture emotions. The liturgy is not a pep rally. It's not a concert. It's not a form of entertainment. It is meant to be the experience where God manifests himself to his people, and his people respond to his presence in worship. Part of the beauty of the liturgy is that we don't need to feel a certain way in order to enter into its richness. If we're feeling grateful and happy, there is a place for joyful praise. If we're feeling remorseful, there's a place for somber repentance. If we're feeling curious, there's a place for intellectual engagement. If we're sad or lonely or relieved or afraid or confident, whatever we feel, we have a foothold, a place to enter into the liturgy. And from that entrance, however, the liturgy invites us to let go of the self. The emotions are a clear indicator of the presence of the self, right? So the liturgy invites us to let go of the self in order to enter into something that's beyond us. We move towards the experience of awe. Awe, which is something ambivalent. It has positive and negative elements. It can incorporate all of these emotional states that we might be in when we come to the Mass. But by not clinging to those emotional states, much less seeking a certain emotional state from the Mass, by not clinging to it, and by practicing reverence, we can dispose ourselves towards this experience of awe. Today Jesus tells us, be vigilant and pray. Being vigilant is being attentive to what might be present out there in the dark, though it's unseen. Praying is disposing oneself to the self-revelation of God. Without these things, we fall into that narrow space where what attracts us is essentially the opposite of the experience of awe. Certain artificial states of heightened emotions, like what Jesus says, carousing, drunkenness, the anxieties of daily life. These things, he says, leave us drowsy, not alert, not disposed to experience awe. John Vervaeke again said that reverence is the proper virtue of awe. Reverence is the true virtue that helps us appropriate awe. In the end, it's kind of like what the spiritual writers say about the prayerful state of contemplation. Awe is given as a gift. It surprises us, yet it's a gift that we can dispose ourselves towards by the way we act, by acting reverently. So, for example, the night security guard, whose idea of vigilance is sitting in a recliner, he's going to miss the revelation of the thief. But the security guard who stands and remains alert, he's ready for his senses to receive the manifestation of the thief in the dark. Reverence is that vigilant prayer. It's a key habit for us to cultivate personally and as a parish community. Reverence is the embodiment of the sacred. It's the bodily expression of our realization that we can encounter the sacred in this setting, in this place. That's why reverence has such an exceptionally important place here in the liturgy. It shouldn't be the case that we show more reverence when we go to the movie theater with its rituals and traditions than we do when we are here with our sacred rituals. God, who is all good, created the universe in its grandeur. He created you and me as the apex of that creation. He made us like Him so that we can enter into a relationship with Him. The experience of awe is a glimpse of how astounding it is that He, the transcendent one, the all in all, can be approached by little me. The liturgy is the privileged place where we could regularly experience this. So let us come before the Lord with true reverence. Reverence born of faith that He is here, though He is not seen. He may pull the veil back. He may reveal Himself. He may allow us to experience awe in His presence. Awe, that recognition that there is a presence, a someone behind the veil. And in that experience, the heart expands in the hope and in the fear that a meeting with this someone might happen soon, or might even be happening imperceptibly just now. There in that moment, that experience of awe in the liturgy, we know that God is real. We know that He loves us. We know our rightful place in the universe. In a word, when we experience awe in the liturgy, God's proclamation from the very first chapter of Genesis reaches the depths of our hearts. He looked at all He had made and found it very good.